From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, we bring you this week's press conference with Maria Zakharova, spokesperson for Russia's foreign ministry. We bring you as much as time will allow. This took place in Moscow, in the Russian Federation, on Friday.
I would like to proceed to the relevant international agenda. I will start with common actions of the international community, and in particular, of the contribution of the Russian Federation to countering the pandemic. During the Soviet Security Council of the UN on the 70th of February, the Secretary General of the World Organization proposed an initiative in the framework of the G20 to establish a target group to prepare and realize a global plan of immunization against the new coronavirus. Russia undertakes active efforts to counter the pandemic of the new coronavirus infection. We believe that the vaccination against COVID-19 is a global benefit, what was confirmed in the resolution of the General House Assembly. We are ready to work in detail upon this initiative. I would also like to comment and respond to numerous questions regarding the analysis by the World Health Organization of the agents that have provoked the disease. We believe that's important that the WHO analyzes the circumstances in Wuhan. The World Health Organization, according to the request of member countries, in May 2020, a meeting took place and it was dedicated to countering the new coronavirus infections. In January and February, WHO prepared a trip of Chinese experts, and the group included experts from Russia. Moreover, there were representatives of more than 10 countries and of international organizations. The experts conducted a serious and comprehensive work, and now the research isn't over, and it's too early to draw global conclusions. And we are sorry to say that in a lot of mass media sources, we saw comments on the results of the mission to China. There are a lot of politicized publications that doesn't enable us to conduct efficient international cooperation in the interest of establishing the truth and winning over the pandemic. Now the results of the mission are being worked on. We will follow the results closely. And one more topic, which is also related to the pandemic. On the 17th of February, Italian National Institute of Infectious Diseases, named after Lazzaro Spallanzani, published a scientific technical conclusion on Sputnik V vaccine. The document provides technical characteristics of the Russian vaccine. It envisages its methods and the results of its experimental use on the basis of clinical researches. In their expert conclusion, Italian specialists highlight that the data at their disposal testifies to a high safety of the Russian vaccine, and in this respect, the institution believes that the Sputnik V can play an important role in programs of vaccinations against coronavirus infections. The conclusion was approved by the Italian Ministry of Health. In an interview to the Italian Central TV channel, the head of the institution, Francesco Vaia, called on the Italian authorities to adopt a politicized approach to the issue of purchasing vaccine against coronaviruses. The conclusions of this reputed Italian institution not only confirms the high efficiency of the first Russian vaccine in the world in order to prevent the spread of the new coronavirus infection. We are ready for an objective and scientific discussion of these matters. We are against the politicization. We are against the use of such a vital topic in narrow interests. And we can only support the scientists. Russia is ready for an open such cooperation on this track. There is another challenge to the world. I'm talking about Russian assistance to African countries in the fight against Ebola. We continue to watch closely the development of the situation with Ebola fever in the Western Central Africa on the 30th of February. In Guinea, a new outbreak of this disease was recorded. Six deaths were recorded and three people with the confirmed diagnosis were isolated. In 2014-2015, Russia already provided great support to Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone in the fight against this epidemic. In Guinea, there is a Russian Guinea scientific Center of Epidemiology and Preventive Measures. We are on the permanent basis, specialist of Rospotrebnadzor work. In November 2019, we concluded post-registration researches of the Russian anti-Ebola vaccine Gamma-Evac-Combi, and the head of the Rospotrebnadzor group in Guinea takes part in the crisis center work. We hope that the authorities of Guinea will be able to
dialogue in words, but indeed they undermine this dialogue. Well, it is quite logical to support domestic dialogue in Venezuela on political situation and at the same time to impose unilateral sanctions against one political group and state that, for instance, nationalism is unacceptable and it is an evil of the 21st century, and at the same time support certain politicians in certain countries that have purely nationalist sentiments and impose sanctions against a country that denounces nationalism. Well, this is just classic. We're just tired of this and we would like to see some fresh start from our Western colleagues. A question arises, is the EU not able to have a normal dialogue on an equal footing without interfering into domestic affairs of others? Let me highlight that way out of the Venezuelan crisis is an inclusive domestic dialogue, and in this regard we are willing to build on this framework to help Venezuela bring the situation back on track, including in our context with our partners from the EU. We are ready to galvanize our efforts on this track. But there are also good news from the West. Given the materials that we got in the internet and in the media, we took note of the decision of the U.S. Department of Justice to deport a former guard of Nazi concentration camp. According to our information, Friedrich Berger receives retirement benefits in Germany. Allegedly, when he came to Germany, he was asked a few questions and not detained. According to media reports, the prosecution was stopped because he was not found guilty. In our opinion, we intend to insist on achieving from the German side some clarification of the situation around this Nazism. And this is especially important since we're marking this year the 75th anniversary of the Nuremberg Tribunal. We hope that the positive example of zero tolerance to former Hitler henchmen that was showcased in this case by the American justice system will be seen as a guideline by the government and courts of Canada that has been dragging its feet on the verdict on former SS officer Gerhard Oberlander. As we previously stated, it is inacceptable to see Nazi monsters die without any punishment, as was the case with Belarusian Vladimir Kartuk. And another news regarding desecration of a Soviet memorial. On the 24th of February, Latvia saw another act of vandalism regarding a Soviet memorial for liberators in the city of Latvia, and secretly vandals stole a weapon that was erected in this memorial. And our embassy in Riga immediately responded to this barbaric act. It sent a Latvian Foreign Ministry a note of protest. It required Latvian authorities to take all the necessary measures to investigate this incident and to bring to justice those responsible, as well as to mitigate the damage in line with Russia-Latvian intergovernmental agreement on the status of Latvian burial sites in the Russian territory and Russian burial sites in Latvia. This is a high-profile case among Russian citizens, and there were a lot of media reports. Many journalists noted that this memorial is covered by the special agreement for the protection of military veterans living in Latvia, and this was highlighted by our compatriots. Riga shall ensure a good treatment of memorials and burial sites in its territory. Previously, Latvian Foreign Ministry abided by this treaty. I would like to say that I've seen an interesting article published in Sputnik Latvia, and there was an article by Dmitry Yermolaev. We will provide you with the link in the transcript. Latvia is tolerating acts of vandalism in their country, and it will be not possible to turn a blind eye of the public to these matters. We'll keep a close eye on the Latvian authorities implementing their commitments. Moving on to Kosovo. Given calls of some Western officials in Western media to Belgrade and Pristina to speed up and to reach some kind of a comprehensive agreement, we would like to highlight our key principles to reaching a viable and win-win solution to the Kosovo issue. We believe that this solution should be based on the resolution of the UNSC 1244. It should be in line with international law, and it should be endorsed by the UNSC. We believe it is destructive to try to hasten and tailor to some artificial time frame the so-called final normalization between Belgrade and Pristina. The main thing here is to reach a viable option that would be endorsed by the public. We support the dialogue between Belgrade and Pristina in order to settle the Kosovo matter under the EU auspices that should be mediated in good faith and impartially, as stipulated by the decision of the UN General Assembly. It is necessary to implement the decisions that have been already adopted, namely to shape a community of Serb municipalities that Pristina derails since 2013. That let me remind you that, and we hope that the EU Special Representative Miroslav Lajcak will be able to bring about progress in this matter, because otherwise the dialogue is doomed to stalling. Of concern is radicalized rhetorics by Kosovo Albanians after the snap parliamentary elections in Kosovo saw the victory of the nationalist party of self-determination. The leader of this party openly declares that negotiating process with Belgrade is not the top of his priorities, and he seeks to unite Kosovo and Albania. Their Western mentors haven't given any assessment, and we urged all parties involved to take a responsible approach, to act on the basis of international law, and to seek compromise solutions that would ensure viable peace and gradual development for countries and peoples of Southeastern Europe. Within our international agenda, we focus on the Middle East settlement, and on the 15th of February, a video teleconference took place between co-chairs of the Middle East Quartet. The Russian side was represented by a special representative of Foreign Minister on the Middle East settlement, Vladimir Safronkov. Upon Russia's initiative since last summer, this mechanism was regular. Contacts take place monthly. We believe that international efforts should be bolstered in order to bring about a sustainable, peaceful process in the Middle East. At the latest session of co-chairs, Russian side focused on the need to create conditions to relaunch direct Israeli-Palestinian negotiations under the auspices of mediators, in order to resolve the situation within the two-state solution, and our partners share such an approach. I would like to note that Russia's effort within the Middle East settlement is not confined to the mediators format. We continue active consultations both with Israelis, Palestinians, and key international stakeholders. We support the efforts of Palestinian movements aimed at reuniting them within the PLO format, in order to improve social and economic recovery in the West Bank and in Gaza Strip. We took part in the video teleconference of the ad hoc liaison committee on the 25th of February. We celebrated the anniversary of the adoption of the 1971 Convention on Psychotropic Substances. This is one of the pillars of international legal drug control regime. We seek to strictly abide by its provisions as stipulated by strategy of state anti-drug policy of Russia till 2030.
This policy is especially topical amid the attempts of the number of states to disbalance the existing intergovernmental system of drugs control through the legalization of several types of narcotic drugs and psychotropic substances. Russia refutes and does not accept such pursuits and speaks in a number of international platforms for the consolidation of efforts. As far as you know, Kyiv hosted on the 19th of February a discussion on occupied territories in Ukraine. I would like to focus on Ukraine and its permanent representative Sergei Kislytsa launched a series of accusations against Russia in its usual manner, distorting the real facts and events that happened with regard to the uniting of Crimea and Russia. You know, there can be different assessments, and diplomats have to exchange their opinions, but there is always a distortion of facts, which is unacceptable, and we cannot compare differences in political approaches to the real distortion of facts and misinterpretation. And we cannot claim that these distortions can be real political facts. In particular, Sergei Kislytsa snatched an opportunity to voice a number of innuendos on the situation in Donbass. We always pay attention to of our Western partners, as well as of the German ones, to the fact that Western mass media practically do not work. They write about the Minsk agreement, they publish materials, but they do not work there themselves. That is why everything that you can hear about Donbass from Ukrainian representatives is to be checked once again and inspiring the Western mass media to come to Donbass and to film what's really going on there. And Kislytsa said that it was Moscow who didn't fulfill the Minsk agreements. And the Russian representative proved that it was not the case. It's very characteristic that 32 out of 139 state members participated in the event, and many of them came following Washington's instruction. And it seems like the only real logic why it was held is unwillingness of Ukraine to fuel anti-Russian sentiments on the UN platform. But I would like to say that the more you promote fake information in international organization, the more interesting those events will be. It's very disappointed that Kyiv continues to practice politicized rhetoric instead of building a direct constructive dialogue with Donetsk and Lugansk, which is envisaged by the complex of measures to fulfill the Minsk agreements, aimed at establishing a solid peace in the eastern part of the country. On the 23rd of February, the first batch of railway cars was delivered in the Egyptian port. Previously, cars produced at a facility belonging to Transmashhold had been delivered to Egypt, and earlier a deal was struck between the Tver's plant and Egypt. That is a very complicated but very efficient cooperation between continents. In the ceremony, Minister of Egypt participated, who gave a very well assessment of the contract. I would like to mention one more interesting topic. In 2019, we are celebrating double anniversary in Russian-ASEAN dialogue and 30th anniversary of our relations with the country. The cooperation is developing, and we are actively working on the enlargement of the practical cooperation. One of the good examples of the dynamic build-up of the partnership is the signing on the 19th of February this year, the Memorandum of Mutual Understanding between Russia and ASEAN on the liquidation and prevention of emergency situations. By the way, the memorandum sets forth organizational legal framework to exchange the cooperation between Russia and ASEAN, as well as the reaction and responses to emergency situations, as well as preventing and monitoring of threats. And this document will facilitate the cooperation between the specialized agencies. And another interesting data is the 1st of March 2001, when in Hanoi, the Declaration of Strategic Partnership between the Russian Federation and Socialist Republic of Vietnam was signed. It became a good confirmation of the willingness of the peoples of Russia and Vietnam to consolidate their interstate relations on the basis of year-old traditions of friendship. The conclusion of this historic document has become a logical outcome of the decades of fruitful cooperation between our countries in different areas. Throughout the previous 20 years, the cooperation between Russia and Vietnam has achieved good results. Regular character of the political dialogue was recorded, and cooperation in humanitarian area as well as in the military one, a trade and economic one, got an additional impetus. And new mechanisms of cooperation were established. They enable us to cooperate to solve the issues of the bilateral agenda, to coordinate their actions on the international arena. It's highly demonstrative then that in 2020, our strategic partnership upon the agreement of both sides got the status of a comprehensive one. The spirit of solidarity that characterized the relations between Russia and Vietnam became more visible when the spread of the new coronavirus infection started. Russia and Vietnam help each other with any kind of help. The specialized agencies of the these two parties continue the an active dialogue on the whole range of issues of the fight against COVID-19. And today, despite the complicated situation in the region and in the world, and bearing in mind the instability and changes in the whole system of international relations, a comprehensive strategic partnership with Russia and Vietnam based on many multi-year experience of fruitful cooperation became one of the most important elements of our external track. We also welcome the decision of the UN Population Fund to appoint a Russian philanthropist and a very beautiful woman, Natalia Vadyanova, as the goodwill ambassador. I would like to remind you that the UN Population Fund was established by the UN Secretary General in 1967. Its main task was to provide assistance to developing countries in the area of family planning, prevention of maternal mortality, monitoring and analysis of democratic processes, as well as in providing assistance to governments in the development of programs in the area of the population and financements of the support in order to carry out these programs. The obligations of the fund's goodwill ambassador involves drawing social attention to the problem of women's health. My congratulations once again, and I'm ready to answer your questions. Yes, I can see that it's Slenda. Good afternoon, Maria Vladimirovna. Hello once again. We would like to move to the north, if you allow us. Due to the fact that the Nord Stream will open soon, and it's a very important channel to trade in resources, and it becomes more and more important. I'm talking about the Nord policies. There is the peninsula of Greenlandia, which got independence from the Denmark's kingdom in 1944, because back then Hitler occupied Copenhagen and Denmark. It is always considered that the population of Greenland were not independent, and those were the remains of the imperialism of Denmark. I would also like to say that in 1944 there was a referendum, the result of which was practically 100%, and the people decided to withdraw from the Danish kingdom. How does Russia assess the independence of these two states, Greenlandia and Faroe Islands? I can say that Green Lakes and Faroesk Islands are autonomous territories within the Kingdom of Denmark. We take into account when we cooperate with them. As for trade ties, Thorson didn't take part in the European Union sanctions against Russia. They adopted a very constructive approach. They are interested in establishing a cooperation in the areas of sports, culture, and construction.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.